Welcome, all you MCU fans, to the latest episode of True Believers here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, True Believers is the show covering all the things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and how it relates to today's comics and what's going on, not only in the theaters, but on Disney Plus. And of course, the big topic of the day is She-Hulk. And you know what? I can't talk about She-Hulk alone. I do have a special guest, but don't worry, we're not one of these every week we have a special guest podcast. And even if we do, I am still the host of the podcast. But I'm glad to welcome, of course, my brother from another mother, my co-host. I'm pretty sure he's not a light elf this week, but you never know. One, Mr. Kevin Reitzel. I'm not buying you a Volvo.
Kevin wants to quit. Goodbye.
How was my light elf impersonation?
You do know it's illegal to impersonate a light elf, right?
Where? On New Asgard or in Santa Barbara?
Same difference?
Be asking for trouble.
What is going on, my friend? Have you been staying out of legal trouble? Because She-Hulk stock is full this week.
Yeah, I've been staying. I've been very good. And I got to tell you, I'm really enjoying She-Hulk. It is a fun, fun show. It makes me laugh. And I can tell that the creators are having fun with this as well as the cast.
Yeah, it has been an absolute blast so far. And of course, we are here to talk about episode 3 of She-Hulk, which means... Yes, we will be doing the deep dive into all things that happened in episode 3 of She-Hulk. So if you haven't watched it yet, go watch it. Come back, watch this video on our YouTube channel or listen to this podcast and enjoy all of our input on everything that happened in season 3 of She-Hulk, or episode 3 of She-Hulk, I should say. And just a quick reminder to check out our Facebook page for True Believers, where we keep you updated on all the happenings in the MCU. A lot of stuff is bubbling right now. I have a feeling by next weekend it's going to be boiling over, though.
Don't get your hopes up. I told you that last time, Kyle.
I'm not getting my hopes up. There's just a lot.
Just keep them down. If we get something cool, great. But don't go, oh, my God, everything's going to explode. I'll keep it down. Keep it down.
It's all going to explode. I'm always in that mode anyway. But without further ado, I think it's time. We got a very fun, very guest-orientated episode of She-Hulk to talk about, so let's dive right into phase 1. Kevin, would you like to give us the episode docket for today?
Of course. This is She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, episode 3. The People versus Emil Blonsky episode aired September 1st, 2022. Walters confronts Blonsky, who explains that he was removed from his cell by the Sorcerer Supreme Wong and that he returned to prison willingly afterwards. While she attempts to contact Wong, news of her appointment at Blonsky's lawyer as Blonsky's lawyer stirs up public controversy. Her former colleague, Dennis Bukowski, approaches the Superhuman Law Division for a case involving his ex-girlfriend Runa, a shape-shifting light elf from New Asgard who defrauded him by impersonating Megan Thee Stallion. Kyle, did you know who Megan Thee Stallion was when this episode started? Because I did not.
I knew of her, but if you wanted me to say I had
liar
much of her music. I knew who she was. Come on, now I do try to keep a little bit of a pulse on the music news, you know.
I do too, but this one escaped me. I had to look it up, go down the YouTube, find out who she was, and I did. So anyway, she is herself, and this is, of course, and I think it's kind of cool that they do that. Anyway, this Asgard light elf, Runa, impersonated Megan Thee Stallion, which gets assigned to Walter's co-workers, Augustus Pug Pugliese. Wong meets with Walters and agrees to testify at Blonsky's parole hearing, during which Blonsky demonstrates his ability to remain in control of the abomination, though he does need new clothes after that. While Walters helps Pug win his case, Blonsky is released on parole, but forbidden from transforming again. Right. After participating in a televised interview to tell her side of the stories, Walters is attacked by 4 men armed with Asgardian construction equipment, YMCA, who were hired by an anonymous client to steal a sample of her blood, though she fights them off. And in a post-credit scene, Walters, as She-Hulk, is with Megan Thee Stallion in her office, signing her on as a new client, and she shows off her twerking skills as they celebrate.
Now, Kevin, first of all, I just want you to know before we continue with this podcast, you do not get any light elf ambassador immunity in the podcasting world. So,
okay. I wasn't expecting it. I felt my argument very, very light. So,
yeah.
Remember, Asgard is not necessarily a place. It's the people. And what
Thor speeches are allowed on this podcast.
Damn it. Okay. I thought it was going to win over the audience here for a second. Thanks for grabbing that cue, by the way, Kyle. You just made that work. So what's your first reaction to this episode, man?
This show just gets more and more fun. First of all, Tatiana. We love you.
We got to have the Tatiana. No, hold on. Hold on. Is it Tatiana as Jen Walters or as She-Hulk? Or a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of everything with Tatiana because, you know, she's got a very severe case of multiple personality disorder, but we love her anyway. This show is, like I said, it just gets more and more fun. I think it's built on every episode. I love the early fourth wall breaking. I love getting Wong involved and tying that in. Never count on the Sorcerer Supreme to be timely, though. We've learned this lesson, I think.
Which is frustrating because Jen mentions it in the episode that for someone who has no commute issue, come on.
Well, that means they just feel like they can wait till the absolute last second to show up. So,
yeah.
Yep. I mean, it's just don't trust the don't rely on a Sorcerer Supreme to be your star witness. That's all I'm saying. But Kevin, they've nailed it. Her personality is so great, both as She-Hulk and as Jen Walters. I love how they're dealing with the world around her with this superhuman law division, and they're really starting to get the fourth wall breaking down very well.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in a second. I love a humorous look at courtroom action. You know, we got that a lot with shows in the 90s and going forward and stuff. And it's always fun to see that. We get the serious ones too, of course. But with She-Hulk, it's obviously part comedy. And I think that is one of the awesome ingredients that works really, really well because – you know, we're seeing a lot more court stuff in this episode, and it's funny, and they're having fun with it. But they're also addressing stuff that we would want to know as average, non-superhuman, sorcery people watching the news going, what happened here? You know, and why aren't they being held accountable for? And what happens if you do get involved with a superhuman / sorcerer / white elf? You know, you could get duped, you know, you might've been asking for it, but you know, I'm thoroughly enjoying this series and I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going on. And I'm really excited for it.
Just Jennifer Walters does need to take a sidebar with her client and explain to him that spandex is a gamma irradiated person's best friend.
Yeah, this is true. This is very true. Blonsky, put an order in for some spandex. So I have something that we did during our Orville podcast recently, Kyle, is that we were kind of doing the fun check, some fun stuff that was happening in the episode, you know, even though there was great serious drama happening. And I did want to kind of start noting the fourth wall breaking. And we had it here when Jen insists to the audience this isn't a cameo show, just as Wong enters the picture to join Hulk and Abomination. And later on when Pug joins them at the bar, groaning about representing Dennis, to remark on how episodes A and B story plot joined up. I thought these were very cute. And you being a fan of our lead star here, you got to love these little smirks and little things that she's doing.
Tatiana, I love you. but that's the thing. And I think that's what warms you to this character even more because you're seeing this personality reflecting at you, not just on the screen. To somebody else on the screen, it's coming right at you. And I think that, you know, I think that's one of the things when fourth wall breaking is done well, it not only does it feel like it's still part of the show, but pulls you in and makes you feel even more of a part of things. And I think She-Hulk's done a really good job of that and continues to grow on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I know some people that could pull off this rune white elf cosplay, and I hope that we see it because that would be very, very funny. So another thing, too, Jen at first starts screaming when the Wrecking Crew, which we will discuss later, ambushes her before she remembers, oh, wait, I'm a She-Hulk. And she's like, oh, wait. And then she turns into a She-Hulk, and there she goes. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You all right there, buddy?
I'm good. I use Tatiana, you know.
And, of course, regarding the Wrecking Crew, they're glowing weapons. And she goes, did you rob an Asgardian construction worker? And they kind of look at her awkwardly, and they're like, yeah.
we'll get into more of the Wrecking Crew in a little bit, because I have thoughts and things I need to explain to you about the Wrecking
Crew. Yeah, and I got questions. Okay, so Wong Sorcerer Supreme, we have some job titles, basically. We have a resume if you were to submit one to you. So currently he's the Sorcerer Supreme, right? For 11 years in Nepal, he was a librarian. And he worked full time. And then prior to that, he was a Target sales associate in Nepal full time for 9 years. So I have to wonder, before he became a sorcerer, did someone just pick him up in Nepal, or did he fall into something going, I got a knack for this, Kyle?
Well, let's be honest here, Kevin. We've both at times in our lives worked in retail. Nothing will prepare you to be a superhero more than surviving a Black Friday working retail.
This is very true. But was he already a sorcerer's apprentice, so to speak, and he was just kind of doing that part-time? Or was he discovered? Or was he just like, you know what? Target's been good to me, but I need more.
I think he was probably
discovered. I'm seriously asking here.
I'm thinking he was probably discovered at Target. I mean, because 9 years at Target? That's some commitment. I'm thinking somebody discovered him, said, you know what? There's a little something extra in your customer service. We feel we could use you, you know, we're offering you a new position, and, you know, see how it goes from there. And, okay, you know, who would have thought clean up on aisle 4 at Target to Sorcerer Supreme? All I'm saying.
I wonder if he's like on the Hall of Fame in the break room, you know,
employee of the year, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, so
what I want to know is, though, when he got the job offer, was it just through, did he just quit and go right through one of those portals, or did he actually give a 2-week notice?
Yeah, I'm guessing he probably had to give 2 weeks notice, you know, so, because if you don't give 2 weeks notice, that leaves a bad taste in people and they don't put your picture up, you know, so.
Yeah, it probably dinged him on his Sorcerer Supreme training too, so.
Probably. Okay, next thing. Dennis Bukowski, while he's on the phone, and this is when the light elf was impersonating him, trying to drop the charges. Pug is on the phone, and he mentions he drives a Cybertruck, and he brags about it. And I'm like, is this like the next step up from Tesla? What the hell is a Cybertruck, Kyle? what is it?
It is actually a Tesla.
Explain.
The Cybertruck is designed as the Tesla truck and sports performance vehicle.
You're serious?
That's the thing. I'm looking at this up right now on the internet.
Okay, are you looking up on the internet, or are you actually looking up like on Marvel Wiki?
Oh, wait. We're gonna fix this for all of because our YouTube people.
Was news to me, the term Cybertruck, and I'm like, I'm just thinking like this is in the future thing now that, you know, alien technology is a thing, and now car dealerships are selling cars that are, oh, I've seen this. This is a Tesla, isn't it? It's like a moon vehicle.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. If you're watching this on video, obviously you see it, but in audio, please check out the video on YouTube here for Fandom Podcast Network. We got the thing. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of that. Remember that old video game Moon Patrol?
Oh, I love Moon Patrol.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that a little bit. Okay, so that is a Cybertruck.
Kevin, just real quick disclaimer. The Fandom Podcast Network is in no way associated with the Tesla Corporation. We are just using their picture to show what was mentioned in the show.
Thank you very much for protecting us from any legal stuff.
Elon, I want to keep Elon happy.
Thank yes. Okay, so apparently we misheard, and we're not the only ones, Kyle. Even Ryan Airy on Screen Crush said it, that Blonsky has 7 soulmates, not cellmates.
Well, that's what I thought it was. So soulmates.
Okay, I thought he said cellmates. That's what I thought. I misheard. So I'm glad you did not, but you didn't clarify it at the time, so I don't believe you.
I figured he was using soulmates as a code word, you know.
Well, it turns out they are a cult startup kit. these seven ladies that are very infatuated with him and felt like he was going to start a commune slash cult with these ladies, and they always seem very admire him. And I liked how he says instead of "they are my better half," he's like, "they are my better eighth."
Kevin, all I'm going to say for this is it's a good thing Blonsky has a little bit of a gamma bonus in his physique and energy capacity.
Thank you for clarifying saying bonus. Thank you for that. Because I thought you said gamma boner. I'm just going to throw it out there.
I'm not in the gutter. You.
Everyone was thinking it. I just said it. There you go. Okay. All right. So one thing I've noticed about watching the show, we now know there's an end credit scene that gives a little funny thing or maybe a tease to something. But you need to pay attention to the actual animation stills they're doing because they actually do provide some extended storylines. For example, when I'm sorry, what's her legal friend that she works with? I'm forgetting that character's name right now.
Nikki Ramos.
Yeah, that's it. How she mentioned that she sent a selfie to Wong with the picture of her books, her in the book. Yeah. She mentioned that. Yeah. Well, they actually show her taking a selfie with the books in the animation still. But also, it seems that once Blonsky is released, he is leaving his soulmates because they're kind of like crying behind him in the van. So it sounds like, oh, now I'm free late. That's the interpretation I took. What'd you think?
Never trust a guy who's mixed with gamma radiation and super solar serum. That's all I'm telling you.
It's just, okay, can you dive into that a little bit more, Kyle?
Well, you know, you got to think. That's a lot of chemical altering going on. You know what they're talking about. The brain ain't all there, man.
Okay, but
so many chemicals.
But this is what evil villains do, is they manipulate other people to get what they want, and he wanted to basically let the parole board know that I have these wonderful ladies. They're going to help me and support me in this farm that I have, and now that he's free, not happening, it looks like.
Are they tears of joy because they're about to achieve their dreams?
Elaborate on that, Kyle. I don't get you.
Are you sure they're not crying because, you know, they're finally getting their dream of going off with Blonsky and to this property and everything like that?
He's leaving without them in that picture. Just watch the picture again. That's what I get. He's like, neener, neener, goodbye. I used you. I'm just saying.
I'll double check that one.
Yeah, just watch again. But it's important because there's some other scenes in there that are kind of fun scenes. And then there's some scenes showing her like in the office, like it's kind of weird. People that she has to work with that are like in a meeting and that one guy's just eating. I mean, there's all these little things you got to kind of take a look at. And even Megan Thee Stallion makes an appearance in those. So they are telling an extended part of the story. My point is pay attention to them. So anything from the cast, Kyle, that jumps out at you?
Not so much the cast, but can we talk about Jessica Gao, the writer, real quick?
Sure.
There's a great article that I found today. Of course, I had kind of a little bit of a clicky bait headline about Kevin Feige bullying She-Hulk creator, which isn't the case. If you actually click on it and read the article, Jessica Gao talks about how she is probably the most challenging writer that Kevin Feige has ever had to work with. And they've gotten into heated arguments, but she loves it because it's creative arguments. And they love having the back and forth with each other. And she says it's the most open and most creative situation I've ever allowed to be in as a writer. Yeah. And she just can't. She's like, I will do anything for Kevin Feige. He is so supportive to the creative talent and the people within Marvel. Yes, he has some guidelines he wants people to follow, but he gives people a wide berth with their creativity. So I just found that very interesting because I know Kevin Feige has caught a little bit of slack in the past about maybe trying to be, people think he might be too controlling of the MCU and things like that. And it just goes to show you here that he's allowing them to, allowing these creators
to challenge
chances and challenge them. He just, he wants to make sure they stay within a certain parameter, but still give them a wide berth to work within it. So I think that's
cool. The challenge that you just said there, Kyle, is staying within a certain parameter. But I think he enjoys and engages in being challenged with something because smart people like him have to make sure that he himself gets challenged and bring and allows other people to be creative. And if it comes, if it's, you know, comes to times where it gets a little stressful, that's fine. As long as you guys both, you know, remain professional and stuff. And Jessica Gao that you're talking to, she it was a writer for Rick and Morty, Silicon Valley corporate. Looking at her stuff here, Robot Chicken. Yeah, so she definitely has a good resume there herself. Cool, very cool.
Kevin, I have a question for you too. We talked a couple weeks ago about Malia Arah, I believe is her last name. She's the stand-in for She-Hulk.
Yes.
I got to reference a little bit of the twerk going on because you know that was her doing that twerking. I got to say, she was keeping right up with Megan Thee Stallion.
Well, if you have seen Megan Thee Stallion videos, which I just recently had to look at to make sure I was educated for this podcast, you will have to understand that in order to twerk in front of Megan Thee Stallion, you will have to do your homework. Because Megan, she knows how to do it, and she does it well.
Yeah, I'm just saying, she definitely did a good job. So I just wanted to make sure she got some props for the effort she put forth.
All right, Malia, go for it. Yeah. And obviously, she's a very tall girl. Thus, that's why she is a stand-in for on-set She-Hulk. So there you go.
Yes.
I got a Dennett Geek article, Kyle.
Oh, what's Dennett Geek up to these days?
Well, we got a new writer this week, Alec Bojalad. I think that's how you say his last name, Bojalad. And he is doing the article this week. And he says, Hi there, Marvel Standums. Alec filling in for Marvel Standums Kristen this week. It's nice to meet you all. Now let's start talk about the twerking. He immediately starts talking about the post-credit scene. I think he was a little put off by it. And I'm sure some people are. And he talks about some of the past post-credit scenes and stuff. So he doesn't speak favorably of that. But in the article, he also mentions that he also got the 4-episode screener. So keep that in mind as well. And we talked about our issue with that in a previous episode regarding these writers and stuff that get to see these episodes ahead of time. Thus, maybe, you know, messing a little bit with their objectivity when it comes to first reactions of TV shows. But it is a good article that he has here, but I want to touch on a couple things he says. He says, after getting things started with Jen's representation of Emil Blonsky, Tim Roth, last week, we get to really see how busy the Superhuman Law Division at GLKNH can be. While Jen puts the finishing touches on her defense of Blonsky with the helpful assist of Wong, played by Benedict Wong, Pug, Josh Segarra, takes on a classic case of superheroic fraud. A light elf from Asgard has bewitched everyone's least favorite a-hole, Dennis, played by Drew Matthews, into believing he's dating Megan Thee Stallion. With only roughly 30 minutes of screen time to split between A and B plot stories, of which Jen acknowledges the existing in a fourth wall break, She-Hulk doesn't go as far as it possibly could with the shape-shifting light elf premise, still as an
apertif.
Yeah, sorry, that's a word I don't use a lot. Of all the superheroic mayhem to come to works like a charm, it certainly helps that Pug is given something to do. It was a nice thing to see, actually, in the episode. I was wondering when he was going to get some action. As anyone who's watched 2 seasons of the other two can attest to, there is no one on television who can play dim-witted yet well-meaning bros quite like Josh Segarra. Even while She-Hulk establishes its own identity with its first proper case of the week, the rest of the show is uncommonly generous with its MCU character time-sharing. Getting both Abomination and Wong in a single 30-minute episode of television is probably a budget buster, but a welcome one. Both really add quite a bit to the proceedings and make the whole thing truly connected to a larger universe. Plus, the end credit artwork of Blonsky leaving his 7 wives in a dust is one of the episode's best side gags. See, Kyle?
I want to bring up a quick point here while we...
Please do. I was going to stop here anyway. Go ahead.
I have a sneaking suspicion when they talk about having these people guest as a budget buster. I don't think it is, because I think there are several people like Benedict Wong who enjoy being this character so much and know the importance of these little appearances that they probably have it worked into, oh yeah, I'll do so many of these little appearances in their contract too. And they have so much fun with them. It's probably not something that they're going to look to break the budget on, because they love being part of the MCU and being part of that greater woven fabric of it.
Yeah, it's interesting how we get writers and critics and even us, Kyle, getting really consumed time at what stuff costs. And that's why we get what we get. And, you know, there's issues of we talked about regarding, you know, the lack of CG money that's put into these shows because they're not the big budget, you know, movies and stuff like that. And I gave my opinion on that. Just, you know, pay attention to the story and just go with the lack of A plus CG and just be happy with the B or B minus, maybe C plus. But, you know, when it comes to the characters that are making these appearances, who cares what kind of budget that it is, Kyle? We get to see Wong. You know, I mean, he's had such a strong role, and as you said, he's kind of become our whatchamacallit. Would you say?
Well, he's the current incarnation of Phil Coulson for the MCU.
Yes, yes, and God, he's funny. He is so freaking funny. I love it. So I did want to bring up something up during this last thing I mentioned regarding the article here. I'm really impressed, actually, with how much they can get into 30-something minutes, including credits, Kyle. You know, you get these two guest stars coming in. You get a quick little court scene. You get the little fight scene at the end. You get the little bar scene, mixing it up with your coworkers. This is a good tight edit. I'm really enjoying it. And yes, there's a part of me that would love to see a full hour of it, but I kind of like that it's a quick 30 minutes.
I'm a mixed bag on this. I don't know if I need a full hour, but I would love a good 40, 45 minutes, because
you want more Tatiana Maslany, but I don't blame you.
Yeah. But I mean, but besides that, I think it would have been, I think there's some stuff that they could spend just a little bit more time fleshing out, but you know, they are trying to keep it with that comedy and sitcom kind of feel. So yeah, they're going to keep these at 30 minutes. I'm probably going to guess maybe as we get closer to the end of the season, we'll see a couple episodes hit that 35 and maybe even 40 minute mark. But they're trying to keep it within the confines of what they're trying to do with the show, so it works. And yeah. But the only thing is it feels like it goes by way too fast too, because yeah. it's so on the go, and then it's over. It's like, no, I need more. I want more. Give me more now.
I just, that thing came up with Blonsky and the prison bus leaving and his followers, they do not look happy. I'm just saying. All right. The writer, I'm sorry, I want to give him credit again. His name is Alec Bojelad. He goes on to finalize everything saying, like any non-MCU TV comedy, the She-Hulk is still finding its voice in the early goings, even as its visual language and overarching plot, hey, remember Titania? Lag behind, the show's sense of humor is starting to shine through. Right now, She-Hulk feels like a legal comedy that a Marvel fan would make it given carte blanche. Checking in with Wong here, introducing a light elf there, and all while twerking its little heart out. And by the way, if you watch the news, Titania is mentioned, how she's looking for legal counsel. So it's not like they've forgotten about her, but is mentioned in the scroll at the bottom. I don't know if you caught that, Kyle. I had to watch it again to catch that.
Yeah, I did catch that. That's quite funny. They've done a great little social media thing, because they're using Titania as a social media influencer, where they've been popping up little videos on Twitter of her walking around defaming She-Hulk advertising.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see her in standoff again with She-Hulk. It's, you know, it's going to happen. Maybe a court off, maybe, who knows? We'll see. But anyway, we get the rating of the show as a 3.5 out of 5. Any other reactions to the article, Kyle?
I think I actually like getting a little bit of a fresh perspective from Kristen Howard, because I really think she's been kind of on the negative side of the show a little more than she
I would agree.
Has been in the past. Yeah. So it's nice to get a little bit of a refreshing side. Again, I'm with you about the seeing all four episodes, but the fact that we haven't heard this voice until now, kind of, it's a nice fresh thing to the mix.
You know, he says that it is still finding its voice. I don't know. I'm, I was pretty dialed in after the second episode. I think that, after the first episode, I'm like, okay, this is what I was kind of expecting, but I'm still surprised by it. Keep it going. And the second episode roll on, I'm like, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it's going. And I think it's found itself, and I'm looking forward to more of it.
I think we're getting there. I think we're starting to see where the bigger main plot is starting to develop. And we're going to talk about that here shortly. But first, we're going to tell you what else is going on the Fandom Podcast Network. And also, when we come back, Kevin's going to reveal his diet and exercise secrets.
That's right. Yep. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
And we're back. Now, you know, when you say, well, wait a minute, Kyle, why we usually have trivia before we split and hit the break? Well, there is a reason for this. First of all, Kevin's going to give us his secrets on getting the proper thigh stretches for twerking, but there's some stuff in the trivia that ties directly into some of the topics we talk about in phase three. And I want to keep that a little tight and a little together because it's very important. And I think it's going to have a big tie into what's going to happen the rest of the way with She-Hulk. So Kevin, would you be so kind as to dive us into some trivia you discovered on this week's episode?
Yes. And my, my advice, I guess, on, was it twerking? Is that what you said? Yeah.
Well, getting the right stretches for your twerking.
Yeah. First of all, don't be a middle-aged man with a bad knee. Just don't do that. There you go.
That's probably the best advice you will ever get on this podcast.
So a little bit of trivia here. The Wrecking Crew wield Asgardian construction technology, which came from the construction of New Asgard in Avengers Endgame. I think they need a foreman with security down there. I'm sure there's some type of Avenger cast off that could definitely provide security there, Kyle. Come on. These things shouldn't be able to leave.
Well, we are talking about New Asgard. So, you know, the nightly mead parties, you know, leave things lying around. Probably not a lot of security.
Yeah. Yeah. They probably smuggle aboard one of those cruise ships, too. So, yeah. In the comics, Kyle, the Wrecking Crew's equipment was made on Earth, but enchanted by Loki. And I know we're going to get into more of the Wrecking Crew in a little bit here. So Jennifer Walters is confronted with the rumor that she got her powers from a mob murder attempt on her. In the original comic book series, this was indirectly how Walters got her Hulk condition. Namely, mob hitman wounded her in an attack, and her cousin Bruce Banner, a.k.a. the Hulk, was forced to give her a blood transfusion to keep her alive, which produced a milder version of his Hulk condition in her. And little factual questionnaire here regarding Dennis Bukowski. He must come from somewhat a wealthy family. And I'm just going to say, I think he does, Kyle, because he sounds like he's very, what's the word I'm looking for? Spoiled, privileged, you know? Mm-hmm. He states he spent almost $200,000 on an ex-girlfriend who wound up being a shapeshifter and ran off with his money. He is an ADA, and an average annual salary of an ADA in Los Angeles is $89,000. So where does he get his money from? I'm sure it's mom and dad. Anyway,
speaking of Dennis, I've got another case with him later on. Can I use you as a witness?
Sure, man. For what? Him or for you?
Probably character witness for both of us. So it might not go well.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
With that, let's dive into our next phase. Man, that gamma radiation gets you a little toasty at times. I'm telling you.
It does. It tickles, too.
Yeah, that is very true. You got some plot analysis.
Yeah, so this is our topic one. Just a little bit of, you know, I mean, the plot's pretty simple, which is really nice for a 30, you know, minute episode. We get a little more, obviously, into, you know, the cases here at the law firm and Emil Blonsky and a little tease and other stuff here. So a little continuity nod here. During Wong's and Jen's discussion on Blonsky's trial, the former mentions that he won't erase everyone's memory. Now, this kind of might put a little bit of wonkiness. See what I did there? Wonkiness. You see what I did there, Kyle?
Listeners, see what I have to put up with? This is fourth wall podcasting right now. So
this is obviously takes place after Doctor Strange and the whole thing that happened there. Because the stuff that he mentions, you know, regarding this and the mirror universe and the dark universe, all that kind of stuff. So does that mean that Wong being the Sorcerer Supreme wasn't affected by it? Or there's questions of maybe some of the memory alteration may not stick. So this will be kind of interesting to see if they explore a little bit later. I did have to mention that.
Well, this throws a little bit of wrench work in the Marvel timeline, too, because first of all, we have this. So obviously it was taking place around sometime after Spider-Man, where Doctor Strange messed with the memory thing there. I mean, why Peter Parker. But he also talked about having to do the training for Sorcerer Supreme during the blip.
Yes.
Because he became Sorcerer. So does that mean Shang-Chi took place during the blip?
Well, this obviously takes place after the Shang-Chi took place after the blip.
Because that's what we thought. But Wong became Sorcerer Supreme during the blip.
That little comment that he makes, he's lying. Uh-huh. I guarantee you he's lying right there, that he needed Blonsky to do this. And that's why we're like wondering, like, wait a minute. I think he's lying here. And I think other fans think the same thing. He's not telling the truth. He's just trying to back up the story that, yes, I was the one that took Blonsky away. I guarantee you he like did that for fun. You know, that he likes to do karaoke if you give him some drinks, and he likes to go to underground fighting thing by transporting champions that he was probably drunk when he made that challenge or was challenged upon. And he's like, who can I get that is big and bad and I can fight?
I think Wong needs to maybe be moved back to Target because, you know, he's not exactly upholding the name of
because it's too Wonsky.
It's maybe wonky.
Runa, the light elf, quotes Thor's speech about how Asgard isn't a place, it's a people, and attempt to claim diplomatic immunity outside New Asgard. I loved how the judge just like cut that down, going, stop. Yeah. That not working here.
No Thor speeches in court.
All right, Kyle, I need you to carry this torch here for topic number two. This is the episode ties to the MCU comics. And I got to tell you, the Wrecking Crew, when I first saw them, it kind of reminded me of future Biff Tannen gang.
This is why I wanted the trivia to not have the break between it, because there's a lot of tie in here to what you talked about in the trivia. So in the comics, the Wrecking Crew are led by the Wrecker, and the Wrecker found a enchanted crowbar by Loki that gave him Asgardian type strength and powers. And an enchanted crowbar. Well, the rest of his crew was nearby them. He shared that power with them. So you ended up with Piledriver, Bulldozer, and Thunderball as well. So, and they became the Wrecker and the Wrecking Crew.
Which is the name of all those characters that tried to beat up on She-Hulk. They
just call them the Wrecking Crew. Now, in the comics, they're actually quite formidable and very powerful. They actually almost killed Thor at one point.
Ah.
And they've been a major part of the comic side of the Marvel Universe for a good while. They've taken on the Avengers. They pushed the Hulk to his limits. As a united group, they're pretty powerful. So they really kind of got the secondary treatment in She-Hulk at this point. But it was fun to see them. It was a fun take on them. I liked the little bit of a comedy angle they played up there. And I think they're going to be a part of She-Hulk going forward. And obviously one of the comments was made is they definitely tried to get She-Hulk's blood, and they couldn't because they couldn't get the needle to pierce their skin. And they talk about the boss, Kevin.
Now, yeah, is going to be upset.
Yes, the boss is going to be upset. I have a theory of who the boss might be.
Can I give you my theory?
To sit here on my wavelength here.
Can I give you my theory?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I did some research. So you know how this She-Hulk is referencing the Edward Norton movie, right? Obviously, for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And it's making people, like, if you really want to get all these references, you got to go watch that Hulk movie, which, of course, was down on the totem pole of films. Well, there's that one smart guy that is injured in this. What's his name?
Banner called him Mr. Blue. Mr. Blue.
Yeah. And you see him on the ground. His head starts to get all weird and wobbly. And then nothing. Is that the guy?
So the way they make that setup is that they were turning that character into a major Hulk comic book villain called the Leader.
That's the guy.
Gamma exposed, super brain from it. Yes. He had a really big head. Right. So I think that might be who the boss is. I think if you're going all in, that's who the boss needs to be.
Do you think they'll bring back that actor?
They brought back Tim Roth. I think anything's a possibility at this point.
Okay. The next topic I've got for you, Kyle, is a little mythology gag here. The original prosecutor of Emil Blonsky, the Abomination, is named Gideon Wilson, who in the comics is a member of the Gamma Corps and the brother of Sam Wilson, a.k.a. the Falcon, a.k.a. Captain America.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious to see if we see anything come from that or if that's just a little throwaway thing that they're just having fun with.
Okay, interesting. All right. Well, I was just wondering if that was the case, why didn't we see that in, Falcon in the Winter Soldier series, so I don't know.
I almost have to go back and see if they mention another brother or anything like that in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah, yeah. So I like the fact, though, too, that, as I mentioned earlier, that in the comics, Jen got her powers from a mafia hit gone wrong. Do you remember this?
Yeah, she was basically shot by accident. Bruce had to give her the blood transfusion to save her life right there on the spot. So
okay, yeah, okay. There was also another Easter egg to the Iron Man 3's shoes. There was a review. Mm-hmm. I will buy those if someone makes them and releases them. I'm just saying. I want to wear Iron Man 3's. I'm just saying. The last topic I got for you is the B-plot. I want to talk about Runa, the shape-shifting light elf from New Asgard. Runa's lawyer tries to get her out of being sued by Bukowski by claiming that she is the daughter of an elfin diplomat to Asgard and now to New Asgard. She has diplomatic immunity. Of course, it just shoots it down, pointing out that her immunity only applies in New Asgard and they're not in New Asgard. Kyle, I got a question for you. Have we got obviously the Dark Elves. That was part of Thor Dark World. Remind me, have we gotten any reference to light elves and have we seen them? I can't remember.
I'm not thinking of any references to light elves unless there was a brief mention in Thor the Dark World of Ragnarok, but it's the first time I think they've truly mentioned light elves in.
But they are a thing in the comics, right?
Oh, yeah, very much so, yes.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah. Who was the actress that played her? I want to give her props here. Runa, Peg O'Keefe. Can we give a shout out to Peg O'Keefe here? She was so funny. I felt like she was a Golden Girl gone wrong.
Are we sure she's not Peg the Stallion?
Yeah, I know, right? She has been on Doom Patrol as Betty Ann Bucklestone. She was on The Happiest Place on Earth, a movie called Red Dirt. Yeah, she's been a busy actress doing a lot of episodic work like Brockmeyer, High Existence, Lodge 49. But I just Peg O'Keefe, Awesome. Loved her. That's what I got for you, Kyle. Any other comments or any other things you want to discuss regarding this episode of, was it, you know, Neil Blonsky and People versus Him and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I do think we'll see Blonsky maybe one more time before this series is over, but I think our next viewing of Blonsky will be in Thunderbolts. That's just my feeling, is that's where direction he's headed there. But I can
Who's
see him
be in charge, though. You think it's going to be, I don't know, you mentioned, what's her name from Seinfeld?
Well, she's going to be, the Countess Vanessa DeFontaine, I believe it is. I think she's going to be kind of like the Nick Fury handler.
Okay.
But I think I know who might be the leader if they're going to pull from the comics.
Who's that?
The Winter Soldier.
Huh? He's good,
though. In the comic, he's good. But the Thunderbolts aren't a team of bad. They're just a government-issued team. And you kind of think of like kind of the Marvel's version of the Suicide Squad. And, you know, you have Jack Flag.
But he's with, you know, he's with Captain America. He's his buddy, you know. He's not going to do that.
Then, you know, he does have sense. He still feels he needs to make up for.
So not buying it. No, not buying it. Not buying
it. Well, you want to know who the other leader of the Thunderbolts is?
Who?
Hawkeye.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. But one thing I did in my research, Kyle, that I want to mention here, that the Department of Damage Control seems to be coming this kind of police state when it comes to enhanced people and possibly mutants. And it seems like that there is a fan theory out there that this is done on purpose so that when the mutants finally come in with the X-Men, we're going to get that whole people versus the mutants thing that we've gotten in the previous X-Men films and in the comics, and that the inhibitor thing was mentioned in this episode for Blonsky, and that Hulk himself was wearing it, Banner, to keep him humanized. So I have a feeling the Department of Damage Control is becoming, because they become their own kind of police force, not like an FBI type of thing, their own chapter within the government and police force. I think this is going to help probably propel that, not going to say necessarily an A plot, but definitely that we're going to see a lot more, and we're going to see a lot of persecution towards enhanced / Marvel, mutants and stuff like that. Thoughts?
Okay, so I'm going to throw out two names for you, Kevin, just to keep an ear out for if we should hear them. Henry Peter Gyrich or Val Cooper. Henry Peter Gyrich is, he's not necessarily a bad guy, but he is not a fan of enhanced human beings.
Okay.
And he's always working an angle to try to capture them or put them in their place under control. Kind of like what the Sokovia Accords were supposed to
do. Gotcha. Sokovia.
Hear Sokovia Accords. So if you hear that name, perk your eyes, ears up. Val Cooper was always kind of like the government mutant liaison.
Mm.
So if you hear that name up, it might be meaning mutants are getting that much closer. So
there was another thing I forgot to mention too, Kyle, and I'm forgetting. Apparently for the legal team company here in the comics, and I thought this was really cool, and I'm kind of curious if a light elf might have a bigger role in this, is that there was a character called Ditto that could change and shapeshift to pretend to be people, like famous people, to serve subpoenas and court orders and stuff like that. Are you familiar with this character called Ditto?
I haven't read too many of the comics that Ditto was in, but I've heard of the character, and it wouldn't surprise me if maybe they turned the light off into Ditto. You know, you this is how you're going to pay your debt to society back, or you're going to be serving.
I find that hilarious. I would love to see Peg here play this type of character and start working as like an intern or something and be able to use her ability for good in a certain point of way. Anyway, but thoughts on the DLC thing I mentioned there, Kyle? You didn't give your thoughts on it.
I think it's a possibility. I'm kind of curious to see how things are going to play out over the next few episodes of She-Hulk, but I know we're not done with Department of Damage Control. I really think there's going to be something more done with them later on, whether it's in She-Hulk or another series. Are they going to become kind of just a running thing behind the scenes, and they're going to get mentioned quite a bit? So it's going to, especially on the street level type characters. You know, I don't think we'll see it so much on the cosmic, but like She-Hulk, Daredevil, Spider-Man, Shang-Chi, Luke Cage, right, Punisher, as they come along. That's where we could see that kind of thing. And Kevin, I just want to shout out to you real quick. It is Dragon Con weekend. Hello to all of our light elves that are in Atlanta right now.
Okay.
Because, you know, they all change costumes so many times. They all have to be some kind of.
Oh, yes. Yes. I see where you're going at with that. Yes. Yes, of course.
So, well, with that, we got one more phase to go into. So. I popped some popcorn with that gamma radiation. You think it's safe? It's green.
No, throw it out.
Okay. If it's good, go by the green rule. Is that what you're saying?
Just move along.
Okay. You're really big kernels, though, I got to say. So, Kevin, realistically, final thoughts and predictions for next week's episode. Do you have anything that you might are hoping for next week's episode or predictions?
Man, there was I learned a lot of Easter eggs from this. And I want to give a shout out to Ryan Airy at Screen Crush. I love his videos and they're quick and easy. And, he really pulls a lot of stuff and he also takes a lot of input from people as well. And if you want to learn more about some of the stuff that I had missed watching it, first or second time, it does put a lot of stuff into perspective and it's a learning thing that I get from you and other people. I'm loving the little character moments too, between the coworkers and the clients. And I think this is, and I love that whole scene with Blonsky, wanting to showcase that he can control himself and how it scared the crap out of everyone. He's like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. But I like how he takes off his Crocs first, cause he doesn't want to destroy the Crocs. So he doesn't care about it, but I'm really enjoying the show. As for next week, I have a feeling we're going to get into maybe more of the gang. The Wrecking Crew, because mm-hmm. I think that was a pivotal plot point when you saw that she has to be, I guess, poked with the syringe needle when she's not She-Hulk, I guess, if they're looking to do that. So I don't know. But I think we're going to get into that. I don't know if we're going to see Blonsky again, like you mentioned, but I'm hoping that we get another cameo of the week or cameo of the episode thing, even though she says it's not one of those. And yes, I do know whose show it is.
Well, speaking of the cameo of the week and knowing whose shows it is, I think it's about time that Jennifer Walters meets one of her contemporaries in court. Might be a little short-sighted or no-sighted at all, but it might be time for Matt Murdock to show up in She-Hulk.
Interesting. Do you think we're going to get Matt Murdock the lawyer, or are we going to get Matt Murdock the daredevil first?
I think we get Matt Murdock the lawyer first.
That would be cool. Yeah, I'd like to see that.
I think that sets up to get Daredevil later, whether it's in the same episode or next episode. Another prediction that, if we're working the angle of, court drama, but a little bit comedy, could you see where maybe the Wrecking Crew is sues Jennifer Walters for assault?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
That could be coming. And I think we will probably find out a little bit more about the Big Boss in next week's episode, too. Yeah. That plot's going to keep running. It also might be time for a revisit from Jen's family. I'm just saying.
That actually would be nice. I don't want to be one and done with Jen's family. It'd be kind of nice.
I can see your dad popping back up. Remember making a phone call for some advice or something since, Bruce is off planet now. Yep. So. Yep. But with that, we are going to get ready to wrap things up here on this episode of True Believers. Of course, you can find True Believers on all of our great Fandom Podcast Network feed sites, including our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. And of course, also visit our YouTube channel where we put all the videos versions of our shows up, including this one, which is beautifully decorated by this beautiful green that Kevin discovered a few weeks back. Of course, you can find us on Facebook Fandom Podcast Network's page or the True Believers Facebook group page, as we told you before. You can email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, or on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can find me, Kyle, on Twitter at Tatiana Will You Marry Me or at A Kyle W. Or you can follow me on Instagram at A Kyle Fandom. Kevin, where can people find you on your social media?
Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix, and of course the True Believers Facebook group.
And of course, too, you can visit our TeePublic store. It is, as of this recording, where it's Labor Day weekend, there's going to be sales going on. Search for Fandom Podcast Network or your favorite title from the Fandom Podcast Network, where we got t-shirts, we got sweatshirts, because fall is coming. Winter's a ways yet. Fall is coming. All kinds of great stuff there. And like I said, you can find the Phantom Podcast Network on iTunes. Use your Podbean app, iHeartRadio, Spotify, so many great places. Kevin, first of all, I am so proud of you. You brought some amazing knowledge, including being on the same wavelength with me of who the big bad might be for the show as far as diving back into the Incredible Hulk. And for that, I'm going to give you a reward. I'm going to let you pick which of the Wrecking Crew weapons would you like to be in possession of. The crowbar, the ball and chain, the pile driver fist gloves, or the bulldozer construction hat.
I'm going to go with that the ball and chain thing. I really like the way that thing glowed, and that looked like that could be fun at a rave party too. Just saying. Yeah, don't know if I'll be able to take it into a Raiders game, but man, I'd be fun having that. I'll take it.
Yeah, the green glow, if nothing else, gives some great ambiance for any kind of rave situation.
This is true. Yeah, I'm too old to rave. I just said that. I'd use it for other reasons.
Yeah, just again, Kevin, you've been banned from twerking. We're protecting your knee.
That's fine.
Thank you to everybody who's listening. Also, again, as I said a little earlier, shout out to all our friends over at up in Atlanta at Dragon Con right now. We miss being there with you guys.
I miss Dragon Con. I love my Dragon Con nerds. Hope you're having fun.
Hopefully, maybe next year, one of us, if not both of us, will be able to reunite. You know, you posted that picture on Facebook of us at last time we were together at a Dragon Con.
Gone.
No, I miss you, man. I miss you, man.
I know, man. It's been too long.
But for now, we're putting the knock on the gavel. This court case is closed, which means, true believers, we thank you so much for listening to us. As we always say, Excelsior, and until next time, make ours Marvel.